Ladies and gentlemen, professors, doctors, Director General of Energy, welcome. Captain of Industries, Head of CEOs, and Head of Departments, welcome to this joint meeting that we have with the Portfolio Committee on Energy, the Select Committee on Economic Development in the National Council of Provinces, which has oversight over the Department of Energy, Department of Mineral Resources, and Department of Economic Development. I'm not sure, but I want to reiterate, because I'm not sure how many people know or read the Constitution of South Africa frequently, but Parliament consists of two houses, which is the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces. And whenever entities go and represent, they say, no, we have represented to Parliament. If you represent to the Portfolio Committee, you have presented to the Portfolio Committee of the National Assembly. If you represent to the Select Committee, you represent to the Select Committee of the National Council of Provinces. If you represent to Parliament, this is the way to represent to Parliament. The two houses together constitute Parliament. So I hope that next time people read the Constitution and they make the right remarks when they do remarks out there. Parliament consists of two houses, the National Council of Provinces and the National Assembly. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome my co-chair, Honorable Cesar Ntikelana, also the chairperson of the Select Committee on Finance, Honorable Charles de Beer, and all other members of Parliament, all our stakeholders, our entity heads, like I said, our DG, welcome to Parliament. Welcome to the briefing of the joint committees of Parliament. Now, we've got one rule in our committee, in the Select Committee. I don't know, Honorable Chairperson, if you've got that in your committee, but in our committee, there is no reading of newspapers. Honorable Kharelan. You have to listen, take notes, and carefully. We don't want people to go out there and say that informed sources told us this and that and that. That's the rule that we've got in the Select Committee. Anyone caught with a newspaper reading, he's got to foot the bill at the end of the meeting. And everyone in the meeting orders at the bar, or as we go to the hotel, if you would like, our favorite hotel is Western Grand. So that's why members behave themselves. But let me welcome everybody to this meeting, and we hope that this meeting will be fruitful. And we hope that you will speak your mind. Don't hold back, because we don't want to recall you again and say, why haven't you told us the whole truth? So don't hold back. Speak. If you see there's a problem, tell us. The DG won't fire you if you're from the Department of Energy. She will welcome that. If you're an entity from the Department of Energy, don't worry to speak. Don't worry not to speak. Speak as well. The other thing is that in the Select Committee, we don't compete with cell phones. And that's why we either keep it on meeting mode, or I won't say kill it, because then you'll go to jail for murdering a cell phone. I'll say that switch it off, so we don't have to compete with it. But ladies and gentlemen, it is a great privilege to see so many faces and to see all of you. Some old friends, some new friends, some good friends. I don't say we have bad friends, but we've got very good friends, whether it's ESCOM, whether it is Department of Energy, whether it's COCTA, whether it's FFC, whether it's SALGA, whether it's NERSA, AMEU, National Treasury, CENTREC, Dr. Lowe, Mr. Lowe, Vembe. All of you are welcome in this session. And like I said, let us be open, let us be honest, let us not hide. as we have heard the President said in his State of the Nation address, we must really start to deliver. And that is our main objective, is to have the oversight on to see how you deliver as an entity. And as government, we really need to start that. But let me welcome you. The introductory remarks will be made by my co-chair. And I think that we can, Chair, with your permission, introduce ourselves. but let me hand over to you to do that part. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ada. Thank you very much. Thank you. Also, let me greet and welcome everyone on behalf of the Portfolio Committee for Energy. Without going into detail, I'm sure everyone can sense the task we are facing ahead today. It's unusual for us to even ask for a special permission from the Speaker's office to actually, have a meeting that goes throughout the whole day. And for all of us who are here know where we come from. If I can make a declaration, always have to declare, Honorable Ross, I slept at half past one this morning. I was going through my internet. I was reading various documents, around the issue of the electricity distribution industry. And I realized that our two committees have done, the most appropriate thing to take the bull by its horns. The current status, as we know, around the electricity distribution industry, as some are saying, is as a component of the electricity supply industry. In South Africa, needs our attention. It needs a comprehensive and intersectoral approach, which I suppose at some stage we will be handling. Safe to say that today, we would like to view and ensure that we structure and mold our expectations on the basis that we are offloading or downloading today, just to articulate all of us, the various stakeholders, what is the status quo, what have you been doing in the past, and believe you me, as Parliament, we are triggering a journey from our side that we hope that at the end of the day we're going to see a conclusive basis as to what exactly are we saying about restructuring of the electricity distribution industry. And amongst other things, what are we doing about the rehabilitation of the electricity infrastructure? Remember what the President said during his State of Nation address. He made an emphasis on a number of things, not necessarily the electricity distribution industry. But at the back of anyone's mind, the question would have been, if that is what the President is expecting, what then are we saying about one of the cardinal components of the whole electricity industry, that is the distribution industry, with all its challenges and risks? I think that's how we need to be moving and linking this industry with the overall supply and particularly affordable and sustainable supply of electricity. Without being alarmist, I'm sure we all will concede realistically that the problem is steadfastly growing. I did pick that up, as I say, I left at 1 o'clock. Reading various articles, papers, reports, resolutions of the past. Whilst acknowledging the role of the government in addressing this challenge, obviously, Parliament is a functional component of the state, has a role to play. That's why we brought everybody here. And that's why we've actually done it in this unique manner by pulling in other parliamentary committees, that is particularly the Select Committee on Economic Development. Thanks, Honorable Adams. Anyway, we always work together on this. It's all instinctive. But particular, gratitude must be given to Honorable De Beer and his group. We brought you in because it's very, very clear. You know, we don't just talk about distribution, but it's so much linked with the finance issues. If I'm correct, we also try to invite the Portfolio Committee for Finance, Standing Committee, sorry, with PEMS, and the Portfolio Committee for COCTA, you know, COCTA, for a very long term. We invited them because they are actually amongst the significant and strategic players to be part of this journey, as you say. The aim of this session is to comprehensively attend to the challenges by various players, as I said. Download, articulate what has been happening, articulate what you think should be done to address the challenges in the EDI. But also, we want to have a sense of progress in addressing these challenges. One thing I've picked up, there was a summit in 2003. Yes. A summit to address the restructuring or maintenance of this industry. And Mamoun Zumande, I tried my best to check it in NERSA. I drew a blank. I tried personally to check the summit resolutions of 2003. I drew a blank. I'm sure we can work together and see if there's anyone who can help us maybe with that copy. The one of 2008, yes, there are resolutions, and it's very, very interesting. And I hope whoever, particularly the department, NERSA, maybe SALGA, you know, they can share with us the extent to which the resolutions of 2008 have been implemented. There must be a link, people, isn't it? We don't just take resolutions and not implement them. There must be a link. We must see how we've moved from that. We would like to share current initiatives by various players to find solutions. The CENTLEC from Mangaung is here just to, you know, share with us how they are trying to grapple with the post-res era. Isn't it CENTLEC around? Baya danki, releboka. Rembe, Wamsland. Rembe municipality from Limpopo. They still will be coming because I was up told with Honorable Adams that they also are making very, very interesting, you know, attempts to address the post-res situation. Very late, one of the members who saw it in our schedule of committee meetings came to me and said, what about the Northwest Province? But we tried them very late last week on Thursday. And Thursday and Friday, they were very hectic for the State of Province address. Hopefully in future, they will share with us what is it that they are doing. Because it's important that we do that sharing as peers. Obviously, I'm sure you can sense, and this session is not just about to benefit us as parliamentary committees, but is about all concerned to ensure that we start now in a very strong platform. I went through a number of things. I've seen that even our very portfolio committee for energy has addressed this in the past. The select committee has addressed in the past. That's fine. But the emphasis is that can we not now start holding hands together and ensure an intersectoral approach? Enough for preaching. I'm quiet now. I'm sure. We can take over. I just wanted to ensure that we are on the same equal understanding and expectation and same mindset as to what I'm going to be doing today. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ntikelana. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we will start our program. We will start by just getting to know who's who. As I've said earlier on, we don't want to hear tomorrow that an informed or reliable source or an unknown source has said this and that. We want to know who's who in the room. Some of us have seen each other for the first time. Some of us have seen what a beautiful face is sitting opposite me. So it's by chance now, Honorable Tabir, that you will get to know the beautiful face sitting opposite you. Let me start by Honorable Jomo. Just a short introductory. Leave the ID number, leave the residential address, just your name, surname, which province you represent, leave the party. We'll get to that later on. And we have, there is a break for tea, but we will discuss something later on.
Baba.
Morning. My name is Jomo Nyambi. I'm a member of the Select Committee. I'm from Mpumalanga province.
Good morning. My name is Charles De Beer. I'm from the biggest province in this country, the Northern Cape, and you're welcome to visit Namakwa in the flower season.
Morning. I'm Bafuna Nguni from the Free State, member of the Select Committee.
Morning. Tandiwe Maimane from the Department of Energy.
Morning, Kenneth McClay from the Northern Cape.
Good morning, Leon Gretzinger from Centec.
Good morning, Lungile Bomela from Centec.
Good morning, Sasha Peters from the Financial and Fiscal Commission.
Bongani Kumalo, the Acting Chairperson and CEO of the FFC.
Eric Lucas from KwaZulu-Natal.
Jacques Smollett, Member of Parliament, from Limpopo Province.
Elza van Lingen, Eastern Cape, Select Committee of Economic Development.
Lance Schreling, Member of the Portfolio Committee on Energy and from the Western Cape.
David Ross, Member of the Portfolio Committee of Energy and from the Good Old Free State.
Asamuloto, Portfolio Committee on Energy.
Ricardo Hensby, Department of Cooperative Governance.
Thank you. Bolelo Musi, Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs.
Lendangri, Department of Energy.
Tabangode, Department of Energy.
Nelisoma Kubane, Department of Energy.
Also the big boss at Energy, Director General. Don't be shy. You must tell us your positions also.
Kennedy Lenzamanda, CEO of NAPSA.
Duma Ngozi, EVI Holdings.
Hwe More, Ayanda Noah from ESCOM, Head of Distribution.
Good morning, Linda Kulusa from ESCOM.
Morning, Karen De Villiers, Parliamentary Affairs Manager, ESCOM.
Maweni, Henry Eckstein, Finance Fiscal Commission.
Hannes Ruiz, representing IMU.
Mthobeli Kholisa, representing SALGA.
Good morning, Chris Nietling, NEC member of SALGA.
Larato Mudisani, ESCOM Parliamentary Affairs.
Isaac Sokopo, ESCOM.
Sembani Bukula, NERSA.
Charles Lavela, NERSA.
Bonten Morati, NERSA.
Mbulele Ngatezo, NERSA.
Simpere Makatini, Department of Public Enterprises.
Those of you that are close to a mic, get closer to a mic so that we can know who you are, please.
Semand one from DPE.
DPE stands for what? Oh, okay.
Rufunom Papuri from Papuri Consulting. I'm the service provider behind the Vembe initiative.
Morning, Chilesha from PMG.
Morning, Jolene Hendrik from Sabinet.
Those people to my right, you are not excluded, you are in the room. So let me hear who you are.
Morning, Mbego, British High Commission.
Morning, I'm Nurse Stuart Denizul from Committees.
Abongo Kobugan FATC.
Now, are there any more that has joined us? If SABC is broad and bold enough to introduce themselves, then I don't see why you should hide.
I'm Mohale Rakhate from the Development Bank of Southern Africa.
Arico Costa, Committee Secretary for the Portfolio Committee on Energy.
Susan Jigelan, for all my sins, I was told to chair the Portfolio Committee for Energy, but I hope I'm doing that. Thank you.
You know, you are doing a good job. It's not to say that you have so much sense. It was just that the good Lord favored you. He see that you had a clean life, so he gave you more work to do. Baba Mzikalana. So it's an honor to be next to you with such a clean life before the Almighty. But my name is Freddie Adams, chairperson of the Select Committee on Economic Development, which I said has oversight over three departments, is energy, mineral resources, and economic development in the National Council of Provinces. Our cameraman people would like to know who you are. So maybe need Fan Fancel, SBC, and Fan says that you must watch the news tonight. So watch the news tonight. Ladies and gentlemen and honorable members, as we go now, any apologies from the secretaries?
Thank you, Chairperson. From the Portfolio Committee, following apologies, Honorable Tinto, who's on sick leave, Honorable Khadebe, who's on leave, and Honorable Matibela indicated that she'll join us later, Chair. Those are the apologies.
Ms. Inizulu, Select Committee.
Thanks, Chairperson. I received three apologies from Honorable Gamete, Mr. Gunda, and Mr. Maine. Thanks.
Mr. Rento.
Thank you, Chair. From our side, the five members are in the ad hoc committee. Others is the state of the province, that is KZN.
DG, we've got Department of Energy to do the presentation first, led by the Director General. DG.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Our marching orders from the Portfolio Committee was to make sure that we make a presentation based on the status of the EDI and also the legislative mandate and what is happening with regards to the infrastructure rehabilitation program. Chair, maybe before my colleague Thabang Odat starts making a presentation, let's just do a quick recap on what has happened with this restructuring of this industry. Chairperson, you'll recall that the attempt to restructure this industry is almost 20 years old. It started in 1992, where during one of the forums on the electrification program, there was a consideration that we probably need to do, or rather to restructure the industry and rationalize it. Because, Chair, what is probably not usually known is that at least about, on the municipal side, about 75% of the power that they distribute is in the hands of about 14 municipalities. And then the rest of the municipalities are sharing the 25%. So it has always been mooted that we need to rationalize the electricity distribution industry. So this has been an attempt since then for a very, very simple reason, for operability of the industry. However, Chair, one of the biggest issues about the restructuring of the industry, which we need to always acknowledge, is that it is tied up to municipal revenue. And you cannot do anything in the electricity distribution industry, especially on the municipal side, without considering that the revenues for the municipalities are going to be impacted. So, Chair, then it was, despite that, I think the then Department of Minerals and Energy did an attempt in November 2000 to take a restructuring proposal to Cabinet. And Cabinet raised a number of concerns and requested further work must be done. And then eventually, in April 2001, they approved a blueprint that indicated that six REDs were going to be, which is six regional electricity distributors, are going to be formed without necessarily obeying any municipal boundaries. And then the whole idea now was to ensure that that blueprint is implemented. In 2005, there was an attempt to establish the first RED, which was launched here in the city of Cape Town, but also as an anchor and also including some of the Eskom businesses, but also including some portions of the Northern Cape. Then history will show that that was unsuccessful and that RED had to be unraveled. And therefore, we had to go back again on the 14th of September 2005 to Cabinet with new proposals on how to restructure this industry. But I think, again, as long as there is the issue around the municipal financing, there is no way you can consider restructuring without dealing with the fiscal framework of the municipality. And the issues were quite glaring. But on top of that, Jay, the Constitution indicates that electricity reticulation is a concurrent function between national and local government. And as such, national government could not do any restructuring without the consent of local government. And hence, therefore, around October 2008, an attempt was made for the constitutional amendment to try and make sure that the electricity distribution industry is separate, or rather, it's not a concurrent function. Chairperson, you will recall that that constitutional amendment went all the way to the Portfolio Committee of Justice and Constitutional Development, and late in 2010, it was withdrawn. So then we had to go back to Cabinet again sometime towards the end of 2009 to say to them, look, this thing doesn't seem to be working. Let's take a step back, and then let's start fix the industry first. Then we can reconsider again on the best method of making sure that this industry is efficient and it also delivers what it's supposed to deliver. So as we stand then, Chairperson, as my colleague is going to indicate, we are now in a position now where Cabinet has indicated that we need to concentrate on the infrastructure rehabilitation. Thank you, Chair.
Before you present, all the other representatives have got the PowerPoint presentations or presentations that they wanted to, after the Honourable Gentleman has represented, please move into that seat. As you know, in Parliament, no seats are forever. So move into that seat and set yourself up and let's do the presentation today. Thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thank you, DG. My presentation is basically to go through the overview of the distribution industry as it stands now. And in doing that, I'll go through the three key areas, one being the legislative, the second, the technical, and the third and final report on the current state of the infrastructure. And the second point that I will go into is the work that the department is currently undertaking on the proposal to rehabilitate the distribution infrastructure. And key to that, Chairperson, is the funding options that we are looking at. Okay, to go into the actual presentation, perhaps some basic definitions. We are referring to an industry which is the final stage in the delivery of electricity to end users. It's currently undertaken by Eskom together with 187 licensed municipal entities. National Energy Regulator of South Africa issues the licenses to all the distributors of electricity. In terms of the percentage split, Chairperson, between the municipality and ESCOM, we have about 40% of sales revenue coming from municipalities, and ESCOM obviously taking over the remainder 60% of the revenue. In terms of the customer base, ESCOM has about 40%, and the municipalities, all 187 municipalities, sharing about 60%. All the tariff applications are approved by the National Energy Regulator for both ESCOM and the municipal jurisdiction. To put the facts on the table, Chair, based on 2008 figures, asset replacement values of about 260 billion for the entire industry. This constitutes of about 376,000 kilometers of overhead lines, 217,000 of cables, and approximately 9.2 million customers. Chapters in this industry employs about 31,000 staff members. There is a key issue, Chair, that we have highlighted before, that within these 187 plus one being ESCOM service areas, the tariff is not consistent. There's a huge disparity in terms of the tariffs that we pay. This business is an asset intensive business with average age of asset being more than 40 years. Some facts in terms of facts and timelines in terms of the establishment of the regional electricity distributors. I have only highlighted the key milestones, and I won't claim to have gone into the details. But in 1999, Chair, there was an approval of a transitional process by Cabinet. In 2001, Cabinet approved the so-called EDI blueprint. Perhaps to jump into what that means, this is the six REDs that were approved, and this is what the company that was established in EDI Holdings were mandated to do. Chair, in 2003, EDI Holdings was established as a Schedule 3A public entity. It was expected to have a six-year lifespan and to deliver on the Cabinet approval. In 2005, Chairperson, Red 1, anchored by the City of Cape Town Metro, was established, only to be wound up after 18 months for reasons that I will go into, not into too much detail. Chair, in December of 2010, Cabinet took a decision for the wound-up of EDI Holdings. And part and parcel of that decision was that some of the work that was being done at EDI should continue, as you know, it is a serious issue that concerns the entire industry. Restructured or not restructured, some of the work needed to continue. Chair, in terms of the legislative environment, I've touched on two key legislations, the first one being the Constitution, and the second one, which I will deal with in the next slide, being the Electricity Regulation Act. For the Constitution, Chairperson, Chapter 7, under the powers and functions of the municipalities, to be more specific, Section 156 states as follows. Municipalities have executive authority and the right to administer all the matters listed under Part B of Schedule 4. I've taken an extract share of what that Part B entails, and amongst others is the reticulation of electricity and gas. So, Chair, what that means is that the municipalities had a legal competence under Chapter 7 of the Constitution to execute reticulation of electricity and gas. The second legislative document, Chair, is the Electricity Regulation Act of 2006. And the important chapters here that I want to highlight is Chapter 2 and Chapter 3. Under Chapter 2, Powers and Functions of the Regulator, to be more specific, Section 4, A and B, gives the regulator certain powers, and that
relates to consideration of licenses, applications, as well as issuance of such licenses. It covers three areas of the electricity value chain, wind generation, transmission, and distribution. It also gives NERSA the mandate to regulate prices and tariffs within the three areas of the value chain. Chapter 3 of the Electricity Regulation Act details the activities that require licensing. And key to this, for the purpose of this meeting, Chair, is that no person without a license issued by a regulator may operate any distribution facility. So therefore, Chair, what that means is that all the distributors had to apply to the regulator for a distribution license. So, Chair, these are the two legislative in the Constitution, and the second one being the Electricity Regulation Act. I have picked on these two because they are the most relevant for this meeting, but, Chair, there are others as well that affect the distribution of electricity. In terms of the technical mandate as defined in the Electricity Regulation Act, when we talk distribution or reticulation, we refer to all the activities taking place for 132 kV down to the 220 volts that you get in our household. There is a specific grid code as part of the South African grid code that defines the acceptable level of infrastructure performance. It also goes to some extent to touch on the expected power quality of such infrastructure. And NERSA has issued certain directives in relation to the power quality. So the grid code is used by and large by the industry stake players as a code of reference for their operation. And it's developed jointly with municipality, Eskom, and NERSA. Okay, in terms of so that's the overview on the electricity distribution industry. Now, going forward, I'll be touching on the status of the distribution infrastructure. And I will put more emphasis on the work, the current work that the department is doing. The status of distribution infrastructure is based on a report that was developed by the regulator in 2007. Following on from that report, EDI Holdings conducted a study in 2008, and the outcome thereof was that three key areas, maintenance, rehabilitation, and strengthening, there was a huge backlog in those areas within the municipal areas. At that time, in 2008, the backlog was estimated to be 27.4 billion. And it was stated that, you know, we needed to intervene urgently because the impact that this was having on the industry was huge. And as Chairperson initially stated that, you know, it's getting worse by the years. So we needed to intervene at that point in 2008. EDI also developed a business plan introducing a holistic approach to distribution asset management, or the so-referred ADAM, as it's popularly known. And the business plan was finalized in 2008. Just the key areas of the business plan, what it entailed. This is per the six red regions that I showed previously. You know, the highest being about 6.4 billion in red 4, and the lowest being 2.2 in red 3. Perhaps to give more details as to those reds. Red 4 is anchored by the city of Joburg, and the total backlog therein is 6.4 billion, 2008 figures. The lowest being red 3, Nelson Mandela Bay, with 2.1 or 2.2 billion. And this is split across three areas requiring maintenance, refurbishment, and short-term strengthening. Okay, in terms of the work that we as a department have started back in 2010, Chair, under the established interdepartmental task team, the departments that were part of this were NERSA, COOPTA, Public Enterprise, DOE, Justice and Economic Development. NERSA was also invited, as well as ESCOM and other municipalities for their input. So in terms of the options that were considered at that time, the next slide will go into the detail of the direction that the department is taking. We had considered six options, the seventh being a combination of any of the six. Okay, I won't go into each and every one, but I'm sure members can have a look at them and interrogate them. The presentation has been circulated. Now, in terms of the proposal, Chairperson, we have a three-phased approach that we are currently working on. Phase one, so each phase will have its own specific output. Phase one, which is a very short to medium term proposal, and it starts, Chair, as early as end of February 2012. And this will be kicked off by a correspondence between ourselves and the regulator. And the implication of this, or the application of this phase, Chair, requires us to have access to the multi-year price determination allocation that has been left over from the EDI process. Remember, the EDI was allocated $1.2 billion at the beginning to execute the restructuring mandate. However, not all of that amount has been consumed. So there is some money that is left from that. And our proposal is that for phase one, we have access to that money and we utilize that money to implement the initial stages of rehabilitation. We intend to do a pilot at certain municipalities to test a delivery model, the infrastructure rehabilitation delivery model that we are developing. So that is phase one, Chairperson. And then phase two, we had been engaging with certain development finance institutions, and our thinking is that we will have a project finance agreement between them, ourselves, and the affected municipalities. And once that agreement has been signed, obviously involving National Treasury, we will then be able to pilot phase two as a specific outcome based on the project finance model. And then phase three, Chairperson, which is more of a long-term phase, is to combine the lessons from phase one and phase two and come up with a comprehensive consolidation of a delivery model, including the funding. And this is, Chairperson, to execute the full program. Okay, in our closing remarks, our start-off point for the rehabilitation is the cabinet decision of December 2010. We are working, Chairperson, on the second cabinet memo to request certain approvals before we could take further the mandate of rehabilitating distribution infrastructure. Okay, that's my last presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. Honourable members and our guests, we're going to take all the presentations. I'll tell you now who they are. Next is COCTA. After COCTA is FFC. After FFC is SALGA. After SALGA is NERSA. And we'll break for about 10 minutes, and then we'll give over to you to pose questions to them for about 20 minutes. COCTA. We have been joined by, I think, one or two people in the room. If they can just introduce themselves.
Good morning. My name is Beth Abrams, and I'm from Gauteng. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members. Allow me firstly to apologise on behalf of our minister, who actually wanted to join this particular session or joint sitting of the committees. It was his full intention until about 2 o'clock this morning to attend this meeting and to do some opening remarks with regards to our perspective on the electricity infrastructure industry. Chairperson, I'd like to point out from the outset that the Department of Cooperative Governance has taken a holistic view and also a historical view of the sector, because we see it as one of the critical basic services. Now, many of the challenges raised in the previous presentation can also be found in other sectors, such as water, etc. But there are certain specific issues as a result of the history of the restructuring exercise that I think makes this particular sector very unique. Chairperson, just in terms of the outline, you will see there, you know, we have a purpose in terms of this particular presentation. There's a historical background. I think the Department of Energy has spoken a great deal about that, so I will be very brief with regard to the historical background, but it remains critical for the lessons going forward. But we're sitting, we're still taking account of the objectives of the restructuring exercise. I think those objectives should not be lost going forward. But we also look at the key policy influences, you know, on this whole process. Chairperson, we're looking at the resolutions as requested by the committee in terms of the summit that was held in 2008. The EDI restructuring and the closure of the project and the impact that has had, but also the lessons from that particular process. As a department, we are busy building capacity with regards to the delivery of municipal infrastructure, and we've set up an institution called MISA, and I will elaborate on that a bit more, but also perspectives for the future. Chairperson, that will go actually back to the lessons learned through the entire restructuring exercise. Okay, this particular quote from the State of the Nation address, which the President delivered last week, is not about ESCOM. We see it as about the entire value chain, the entire industry. So we're not singling out ESCOM. But it is just to say, especially the last part for us is very critical. The issue of affordability for the poor. Because that speaks directly to the mandate of government and the mandate of our department in particular, who serve local government, but with the objective of serving communities. But we're also saying there are other critical aspects, and this quote actually covers them in a very nice way. Financial viability, I think the DG in particular raised this issue. Financial viability in the sector and for the role players in the sector become very important, especially municipalities. And also the long-term sustainability. Because we cannot continue with a system where municipalities do depend on income from electricity. And yet they underinvest in the infrastructure that provides that very source of income. So that is the long-term anomaly that we have to deal with in a very sustainable manner. Chairperson, the overarching and broad purpose of our presentation is just to present our own perspective towards and contribution towards the resolution of electricity distribution infrastructure challenges for improved service delivery. It is a broad service delivery challenge, and that is why we say we're taking it in the broader context of municipal services. Chair, I think the DG and the colleague from DOE have already reflected on the historical background, but it's important just to indicate again that this particular discourse started a long time ago. So many of the things that we're going to say is nothing new. But we are asking as a department for continuity with some of those discussions and the discourse with respect to that. Post-1994, government found expression, of course, in the white paper. We all know about that. But it's important to reiterate, you know, some of the principles, I think, contained in the white paper, and that is what we're trying to achieve through this exercise. In 2001, the study commissioned by the former Department of Minerals and Energy, the need for transformation identified, we believe, is still relevant. We have a more recent figure taken from, you know, the baseline of $27 billion in 2008. We estimate that the backlog is increasing at about $2.5 billion. If you calculate more or less conservatively, we say right now, in at the beginning of 2012, we could be as high as 35 billion backlog with regards to electricity infrastructure in the distribution sector. In March 2003, obviously EDI Holdings was established to lead the restructuring of the industry. With this chairperson, a body of knowledge and expertise accumulated during the seven-year history of the existence of EDI Holdings, including business plans such as the ring fencing of the industry and ADEM. Chairperson, we are saying we don't want that particular experience to be lost. We don't want the skills and expertise and the capacity to be lost. We don't want that body of knowledge to be lost in the process, because somehow it seems as if it has come to an abrupt standstill. And that's why this particular initiative by the three committees is so critical, I think, to escalate the importance of this exercise again. The broad objectives during that period, Chair, which still remain relevant today, you can see right at the bottom, we are emphasizing that, is to provide low-cost electricity to all consumers with equitable tariffs for each customer segment, to provide a reliable and high-quality supply and service to all customers, in support of government economic and social development plans. And that relates back to the quotation of the President in the State of the Nation address. To meet the country's electrification targets, our department plays a role with supporting sector departments as well as municipalities with reaching those targets with regards to basic services. But also to contribute to employment and, you know, broader economic development. But I think also importantly is to operate in a financially sound and efficient manner in order to provide a reliable and sustainable future for both consumers and employees. Again, Chairperson, these very objectives remain the objectives for today. And I think we just need to come back to these very objectives to guide the course going forward. Because it will be such a pity if we just reinvent the wheel, and so much has already been said. Key policies, I'm really not going to go through all of them. I think the Department of Energy was more comprehensive in going into the detail there. But again, we want to confirm that these policies are important to inform future perspectives. Chair, you know, just to again, you know, point to the resolutions of the summit of 2008. At the policy level, stakeholder support for the proposed constitutional amendment bill was approved by Cabinet. The process got very, very far. And because of the vested interest within the sector, I think it played a big role in terms of determining the outcome of the process thereafter. The implementation of the Cabinet resolution of 25 October to establish six wall-to-wall rates as public entities that will ensure accessible, affordable, reliable and sustainable provision of electricity for all was an important decision. Again, it points out how far we got to the full restructuring of the sector. Many of those models and lessons, I think, still remain very relevant, and we must revisit those as part of this debate and discussion. At the operational level, Chair, we were talking about the development of financing model for the industry. Yes, intergovernmental fiscal relations will play a critical role. We are, as a department, currently having a debate with National Treasury, which will culminate in a fiscal intergovernmental relations fiscal summit, and the FSC is also a participant in that exercise, as well as other sector departments, to determine what type of fiscal model we would like to see. And this model also needs to talk to the specific needs of sectors. Chairperson, we are also indicating the development of industry-wide comprehensive and integrated skills development and retention plan. At the moment, there is much fragmentation with regards to skills development. We think there is a lot of room for improvement in terms of consolidating what we are doing with regards to skills development, but also to ensure that we work smartly to share skills and expertise. You know, it is easily said that we have a shortage of technical expertise, but yet you find that much of that expertise is underutilized. So we must also look at the issue of efficiency in the system. The development of a framework to strengthen the capacity of municipal distributors to maintain infrastructure. We cannot run away from the fact that municipalities are still distributing. We need to continuously build their capacity and ensure that they have the relevant skills. Chairperson, the development of information management capability remains important. But I also want to indicate that with regards to Adam, the Department of Energy, the fact that they're taking up the very same principles again and bringing it to cabinet will only help the process going forward. But also importantly, Chairperson, is the benchmarking and monitoring of performance between the distributors to avoid this issue of different standards, of different levels of infrastructure development, and of different levels of investment. Demand-side management obviously still is very critical, Chairperson. In terms of the restructuring that was done and then the closure of EDI, Chairperson, the business plan developed on ring fencing, we think should be revisited. The whole strategy developed and adopted by Askisa of Adam, as I indicated, we are glad it's going back, or some of it is going back to cabinet. The fact that Red One was established in the city of Cape Town, we should draw from that particular experience. But we felt that, you know, in terms of the closure of EDI Holdings, the decision to close it in 2010, there were a number of implications. We feel that given the amount or the level of investment in this exercise, critical skills have been lost to the sector. Many of those skills have not been reabsorbed into the sector, or especially into the public service. And that is where that skill is most critically required at the moment. The loss of knowledge, we've indicated that it is very important to retain some of that knowledge. But also the loss of the financial resources. It is heartening to hear that from DOE that there's still some money left from the EBI exercise. That will be put to good use, Chairperson. Basically, the lessons, we require as a sector policy certainty, Chairperson. We also need stakeholder mobilization towards a common and shared vision. We've partially achieved that through the restructuring exercise because all stakeholders at that point in time were on board. There was broad consensus across the country on the restructuring exercise. And we want to come back to that point, but exceed it in the process. The need for financial resources to support transformation, and we need serious discussions with Treasury, but also with ESCOM and the other role players to ensure that we capitalize this exercise appropriately. We've already spoken about Adam, and then the need for comprehensive and integrated skills development program, I think could not be stressed more. The need for coordinated approach to infrastructure maintenance, the refurbishment and investment. We want to look at the entire value chain in the distribution segment of the industry, Chairperson. We cannot look at it in isolation. Chairperson, as I've indicated, our department has set up an agency called the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency. And I'll report a bit later on where we are with that particular institution. But I think it's important to indicate that our approach to asset in terms of Adam, the focus areas should remain the same. The focus areas on decision makers and mobilizing funding, stabilizing the industry and ensuring service delivery certainty, to promote a broader understanding of the long-term nature of the delivery of electricity infrastructure, which speaks to the issue of sustainability, Chairperson, but also to reduce the number of power outages arising out of weaknesses in the distribution network. Obviously, the public always thinks it is on the generation side that we sometimes have problems with outages, but it's also on the issue of distribution. And then to optimize the use of scarce resources within the industry. MISA is in the final stages of being operationalized. Last year, Chairperson, we had a conference, a consultative conference with stakeholders to introduce MISA to the public. There is, we have prepared as a department a cabinet memorandum for cabinet approval to establish MISA as a government component which will report directly to our minister. And MISA will look at the broad spectrum of basic services, including water sanitation, but also electrification. MISA is really an outgrowth of the Sienza Manji program, which was with the DBSA previously. We've absorbed the engineers, planners, and technicians that were located with Sienza Manji into MISA now. And at the moment, we have close on 80 engineers and technical experts who are deployed at municipal level to assist municipalities with infrastructure planning, execution, but also monitoring and evaluation. We feel that MISA can contribute in the provision of technical support to the industry in the short term, Chairperson, although we need to find sector-specific solutions as well. We also feel that the broad approach of MISA is in line with the principles of ADAM and the methodology it subscribes to. Chairperson, the basic focus area of MISA is municipal diagnosis and assessment. It goes out to municipalities and it does a diagnostic report. It then looks at technical capacity support within municipalities. That is where we make the technical experts available. But we also look at municipal capacity development to ensure that there is training, ongoing training of those who are tasked with technical responsibilities at the municipal level. But we also look at building capacity within sectors, like within the energy sector, etc. But then MISA also has an M&E function. I think finally, Chair, we just want to conclude with a few points on how we see the restructuring exercise going forward. We feel, Chairperson, that our department should play a central role within the field of coordinating the stakeholders, especially the intergovernmental stakeholders with regards to the sector, under the leadership of the Department of Energy. The Department of Energy is the sector leader, but we feel that we can play a greater coordination role, hence releasing the department to focus on its core business of electrification and energy. But, Chairperson, it's also important that when we do this coordination, it will be to achieve this consensus required to move the process forward. Chairperson, we also would like to suggest that MISA should draw on the EDI and ADAM experience, because it will play a critical role going forward. But it should also absorb some of the displaced technical expertise of EDI Holdings and bring it back to the service of the sector. Because this type of expertise requires a home, and we are opening up the doors of MISA to do that. Obviously, we have limited financial resources to absorb everybody, but it is something that we will certainly consider, and we will follow due process in that regard, Chairperson. Chairperson, with those few words, I'd like to thank you, but my colleague, who has been intimately involved in the EDI process over the years, would also like to make a few comments. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I wasn't ready for compliments. Suffice to say that, Chair, three things that we would like to emphasize based on what colleague Ricardo has said. By the way, my name is Mbulelo Musi. I'm the acting head of communication. Firstly, the minister would have liked to emphasize one point if he had been able to make it. One is around emphasizing a collaborative intersectoral approach that the chairperson spoke to, as an approach that COPTA would like to adopt and therefore work with the portfolio committee and all stakeholders from that perspective within the context of MISA and other programs that the DOE has outlined. And therefore, by implication, working closely with DOE is going to be a critical element of our approach to seeking solutions that are sustainable in the development and maintenance of infrastructure. The second area is the fact that our sector also involved SALCA as a statutory body. The area we want to emphasize is in our collaborative approach, SALCA will play a catalyst role given its constitutional mandate, but perhaps also the full national footprint it has. So we'll be leveraging the capacity of SALGA in the direction of strengthening infrastructure development for service delivery. The last point we'd like to make is that given the seriousness of the issues that have been canvassed by the presentations, part of the focus of COCTA this year is going to be accelerating the local government turnaround strategy delivery. The second aspect is going to be outcome 9, which is building a responsive, accountable, efficient and effective local government system, one of which will be the 7 outputs of is a coordinative role to strengthen cooperative governance within the context of infrastructure development for service delivery. And that outcome 9 has become a service delivery agreement between the minister and the president, given the seriousness to ensure that we actually find expression to deal with this infrastructure challenge. So it's at the highest level of the department and the highest level of agreement with the country. Part of which also includes what we call a differentiated approach in our outputs. We want to suggest that the research done and experience accumulated tells us that there cannot be a one-shoe-fits-all approach in finding a solution to municipalities. We require a differentiated approach that takes into cognizance the social, economic, financial, and institutional challenges that each municipality has. And in that direction, we have identified within the context of MISA 100 out of 278 municipalities that require assistance from point of view of governance, financial interventions, but even more importantly, infrastructure development. And we hope that the process that DOE has outlined today will seek us to collaborate on identifying those municipalities within the 100 that we've identified so that we have a seamless process of government intervening in a coordinated manner. Thank you very much.
Mr. Henry, what does MISA stand for?
Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency.
Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency. Next presentation, it is FFC.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Co-Chairs, and Honorable Members, for the invitation to this briefing. I want to also say I'm quite happy that the two departments presented ahead of us, because I was going to leave a couple of questions for them, which fortunately they have managed to speak about, so I'm not going to ask those questions. But maybe as the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee said to me on the phone when we were arranging for this, we need to find a way of taking some of the key issues forward. And I think from what was presented by the DG of the Department of Energy, there is definitely some issues that as a commission we will need to be in touch with the department. Let me start off by looking at a few issues that I think are important to take into consideration as we make our submission. I think it's important that we look at the challenges that actually face the electricity distribution in industry and what the impact on the services on the ground actually becomes. From our perspective, it's important and it's quite key that the DG highlighted the fact that because of the allocation of the functions and powers, it's important that whatever decisions are taken with respect to this particular service or function are taken in a cooperative governance manner. Now, it's important also that those decisions that are taken take serious cognizance of the local government fiscal framework. And that is where the Financial and Fiscal Commission actually fits in. I think in terms of the experiences of the past, some of the key challenges that the Commission was facing with the process were that the local government fiscal framework was not really taken into serious consideration when the decisions were taken. So it's an important part of what the Commission would like to say going forward. We need to take that into consideration. In fact, the Commission had held a set of hearings towards the end of last year on the local government fiscal framework. And one of the key issues that actually emerged relates to what is actually happening in the electricity distribution industry and what that impact is, not only in terms of service delivery, but on resources available for municipalities. And so it's an important issue that we will be taking forward as we move forward. So let me just go into a few issues that I want us to take into consideration. I think there is no doubt that infrastructure is a key lever for accelerating economic growth, given the current context in which the global economy is operating. And if one goes back to the FFC's recommendations for 2009 that tried to project what the fiscal framework is going to look like as we emerge out of the recession and when we are likely to recover, which means we must talk about the envelope. When we are likely to recover, our projection was that it will probably be after 2015. And even then, we are likely to go back to the trajectory at which we were going before the recession, which means all the waste that has been taking place, we will have to have tried to have internalized it through efficiency gains that fiscal consolidation must actually entail. And that means that in terms of investments for infrastructure, we have to take that into cognizance. A big part of this infrastructure investment that the Commission talked about basically relates to maintaining and rehabilitating existing infrastructure. That's a very critical part, and I think the President's State of the Nation address did highlight that as a very key priority of government as we move forward. Now, so obviously there are these challenges that I don't have to go through, but just to remind the House about significant backlogs, and they're still accumulating in certain areas, driven primarily by lack of maintenance and rehabilitation of existing infrastructure. Very low spending on repairs and maintenance, and generally low technical capacity. I think the initiative that the Department of Cooperative Governance is talking about is a direct recognition of the lack of capacity when it comes to dealing with some of these challenges around infrastructure, and one will have to cautiously welcome the direction that has been taken in establishing MISA. Just some numbers that we have. These are 2009 figures that basically show the extent of the problem when it comes to municipal infrastructure. Now, this chart basically looks at all of the infrastructure. So it's not necessarily electricity infrastructure. But in terms of the trends, when we look at, try to break it down and see what is happening to infrastructure, maintenance, and backlogs, we definitely find that there is a pattern that seems to suggest that there is a decline, or at best, there is not an increase in allocations by municipalities for the maintenance of infrastructure on electricity. So I think let me stop here and ask Sasha to take you through the main points that we wanted to raise.
Thanks, Chair. I think the previous presenters have provided a good overview of the status quo within the electricity sector. So just very briefly, I think the point that the FFC wants to raise here is that following the Cabinet decision in 2010 to discontinue the reform process, no indication of an alternative was provided. So at present it's not clear what the way forward is, and our concern is that this is an outstanding issue that creates a lot of uncertainty in the sector. So we've heard a lot of this as well. The estimated backlog with respect to EDI sitting at, or was sitting at, 27.4 billion as at 2008. It's estimated that this backlog grows by about 1.6 billion per annum. And against this backdrop, there are a number of other complexities. We see that municipalities are not increasing the portion of their budgets dedicated to repairs and maintenance and refurbishment. And again, we know that there are various reasons for this, but our concern is that with the uncertainty in the sector, this also makes municipalities cautious when it comes to investing in this. Then we've got the issue of non-cost reflective tariffs, and we know that Section 74 of the Municipal Systems Act requires that tariffs be cost reflective and factor in cost of maintenance, etc. So municipalities are battling with all these issues, and added to this is the complexity of the uncertainty. What we'd also like to raise is the current approach to funding repairs and maintenance. Presently, municipalities fund this component from the operating budget. So it's at their discretion, really, as to what to allocate. And what we've seen through our research is that repairs and maintenance is a soft target when it comes to sacrificing certain items on the budget. So we've just taken the city of Joburg just to illustrate between 2008 and 2010, the decline in the proportion of operating expenditure that's being allocated to electricity repairs and maintenance, which, as I said earlier, we think is in part attributed to the lack of a way forward with respect to restructuring. Again, just a sort of general picture that shows real capital investment, including rehabilitation across a number of sectors, electricity, housing, roads and stormwater, water and sanitation. And again, the highlight is the decline in investment in electricity relative to the other sectors. So why do we need to address the situation? What is the danger of continuing with the status quo? Well, it puts sustainable delivery of services at risk. The cost of not conducting repairs and maintenance regularly places a strain on public finances. If distribution infrastructure is aging and cannot meet demand, there will be a definite impact on the productivity and profitability of companies, so an economy-wide impact as well. Then again, sorry to be stating this in every slide, but the issue of restructuring outstanding creates uncertainty, and in the face of uncertainty, investment in the sector is affected. Chair, in 2009, the Commission examined the restructuring process that aimed at shifting towards the regional electricity distributors, and we came up with a number of recommendations that we think could now be turned into lessons that can be drawn on and taken forward. So, for example, we are of the opinion that reform should not be piecemeal. It should be undertaken in a holistic and integrated manner. So instead of just focusing on distribution, focus on all aspects of the electricity value chain. And then any reform needs to be based on the root causes of the challenge. If poor performance is the result of ill-defined mandates, poor regulation, lack of funding, then, for example, moving towards a regional sort of system may not solve the problem at all. So we need to know what we want to be addressing. And then with some of the meters...
I'm sorry, Chair.
Sorry?
No,
sorry to break the train of thought. Just on that point, I trust Centlek and Rembe will articulate how they intend addressing just the boundary of race. Thank you.
Then with some of the metros and larger municipalities, and of course ESCOM, distribution is being managed relatively well. So considering that there is this variable performance, is there merit in calling for sort of a blanket reform, which was the approach before? I mean, is there not a more differentiated approach that can be taken that recognizes that there are pockets of good performance? So since distribution falls within the ambit of responsibility of municipalities, we obviously need to get their buy-in, and this should be done at the very start of any reform process. And as FFC, we also believe that we may not need to go the route of extreme measures such as changing the constitution, because we see that the current legislative frameworks within which we operate allow for creative delivery arrangements. You have your sections 82 and 87 of the Systems Act, which allows for establishment of an entity or municipal service delivery district, that type of thing. But we caution that if the approach is to use an entity or outsource distribution to a third party, we should give careful consideration to the ability or capacity of municipalities to conduct adequate oversight of activities. And then it was mentioned earlier, but we need to ensure that the revenue of municipalities are not compromised. At present, municipalities derive about 30-40% of total revenue from electricity, and this is used to cross-subsidize a range of other municipal services. And then, of course, at the very start, we need to be clear with the lines of accountability that need to be followed. Chair, there were also a host of past recommendations that the Commission has proposed broadly with respect to infrastructure and specifically on electricity, and we just wanted to update the committee on progress with respect to these, but I'll just list a few. They are listed in the presentation for members to go through. So, for example, we recommended that government implement a fully comprehensive national infrastructure maintenance strategy. This recommendation was agreed to by government, and we are pleased to see that there has been progress in this regard. And there's talk of an infrastructure development bill being tabled during this year. So we anticipate that maintenance will feature strongly in this piece of legislation. Then just to pick another one, we've also made recommendations regarding the need for an increased and stable flow of funds for maintenance. And whilst there was agreement with this from government, municipal statistics show otherwise. Our research indicates that municipalities are allocating on average about 5% of operating expenditure to maintenance. There is a sort of national guideline. Treasury recommends that between 8-10% of your operating expenditure be dedicated to maintenance, but municipalities are falling short of this. And then finally, Chair, the Commission has just noted about 5 areas that it would like to propose be prioritized and put on the agenda going forward, and it relates specifically to repairs and maintenance. The first is the possibility of an alternative approach to funding repairs and maintenance. The existing approach is not working. And just to note for the committee's attention that the Commission is intending to do research on an appropriate model of funding model for repairs and maintenance. We also intend to look specifically at what incentives government can use to facilitate greater investment in repairs and maintenance. Then we are of the view that municipalities should prioritize development of maintenance plans, a maintenance management system, and production of regular maintenance reports. So moving towards preventative maintenance as opposed to what we see now with more reactive type maintenance. Then the importance of asset registers cannot be overemphasized, guidelines on acceptable maintenance levels, and then to conclude, we would propose that government provide guidance on the restructuring process, to eliminate uncertainty in the sector. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Christy. Sauda?
Good morning. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Sorry, Councillor Yetla. Ladies and gentlemen, there's too much movement in the room at the moment. If you can settle down, Councillor Yetla.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, this morning until now, I've heard some very positive attitudes towards SALGA. We, as the representative of municipalities, we are of concern that we're not always involved with all the decision-making that is going on at this stage and moment. I think it's therefore of utmost importance that SALGA as a sphere of government is more involved, and I think your attitude towards that is also important. We urgently need that coordinated effort. And the positiveness from Kofta's side, thank you very much for that. We appreciate. What is an effect in that is that we working for the people outside, our concern is that the poor, they cannot afford these tariffs that we're paying nowadays. And that is our concern, and we've got to work together. And I think as what the chairperson have said, it is time now that we should hold hands. In this respect, as far as the technical side is concerned, I would ask our executive director, Ntobeli Kolisa, to provide you with the more technical details. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair. We were asked to address three issues. One is the dual regulatory system between NERSA and municipalities on supply and distribution of electricity. And the role of SALGA in that regard. The second two is SALGA's views, one, on electricity distribution industry, and secondly, on the rehabilitation of electricity. So therefore, the presentation, Chair, is structured in terms of those issues. In respect of the first one, I think the point to make maybe in these two slides, without going into detail in those two slides, we are making a point there that essentially, NERSA is basically involved in deciding on service delivery institutional arrangements in municipalities. It's in the law. The law makes NERSA to be involved. That's one part in terms of where does this dual regulation come from. But on the other hand, if you look at the constitution, municipalities are the authority of electricity distribution, and the Act, the Systems Act, outlines a process by which municipalities have to decide on service delivery arrangements. So, in a sense, then you find that there is that dual role that is being played, and in fact, in terms of the Systems Act, a licensed service provider such as Eskom. Is but one of many options that a municipality must consider. So far, we have not really been exercising this because as soon as a license is issued to a distributor, typically Eskom, then Eskom becomes a distributor and without any authority from municipalities. Without going into detail, so I'm saying that the first area of dual regulation, therefore, is the regulation of who will provide the service.
That's one area that needs to be resolved. And how are we dealing with it, or what has been the impact of this? The first part is that we have seen, as a result of this dual regulation, an unfair treatment of municipalities in areas where ESCOM is a distributor, where there are no service level agreements between ESCOM and municipalities and service authorities. Consequently, this results in a situation where municipalities are not able to use electricity as a credit control measure, for instance, their areas. So where ESCOM is a distributor, municipalities tend to be able to recover less revenue than they could elsewhere when they are themselves distributors, which in many cases makes municipalities to want to be distributors, if nothing else for that particular reason. And also besides the fact that in terms of the current design of the fiscal framework of local government, which makes service charges a key source of funding, and in particular electricity revenues a key source of funding for municipalities, in areas where ESCOM is a distributor, municipalities do not get any income from electricity distribution, which makes those municipalities naturally not to have the kind of ability that other municipalities would have to deliver services, because by design you need to get money from electricity to subsidize other services, and if you don't get any, it becomes a problem. So that's one of the things. What is SALGA trying to do in this respect? At the national conference last year, municipalities resolved that all external mechanism service provider arrangements must be done through the process, or decided through the process of the Section 78 of the Systems Act, where all possible options are considered. We did some kind of a Section 78 process as we were preparing for the restructuring, but you would know that at that time the outcome was predetermined, that go through a Section 78 so that a red would be the outcome. So we have not in reality looked at the case by case of each municipality and said what could work, what could not work in that particular municipal area. The second point that was resolved then by municipalities was that in the case of electricity distribution, the service level agreement which must be part of a decision, once we decide to have an external mechanism, that there must be a service level agreement. That service level agreement must also use electricity supply. It must allow for use of electricity supply as a credit control measure. Thirdly, that it must allow for implementation of a revenue surcharge, so that municipalities do not lose out on revenue purely because a service provider is appointed to distribute. The second area of what I can call dual regulation, as has been said in our invitation, is an area of regulation of prices and tariffs. Again, in this light, without going through the details, let's provide it in the written text, which members can read later. It's very clear that NERSA, in terms of the Electricity Regulation Act, has a power to regulate electricity prices. One, and secondly, is empowered to make. Any license issued to be subject to a number of conditions, including a condition of setting and approving prices. So once you get this license, it means also NERSA can actually set and approve your tariff. And we will know that in terms of the local government legislation, municipalities also are supposed to be setting their own tariffs. So you will see that there appears, therefore, to be an overlap in terms of the provisions of the Electricity Regulation Act and the provisions of the Municipal Finance Management Act, if you read it together with the Municipal Systems Act. Therefore, this is another area of dual regulation that we thought needed to be resolved. But how then do we propose to deal with this, or how are we dealing with this? While the two legislations seem to clash, SALGA has chosen an interpretation that is full force and effect to each, rather than an interpretation which partly destroys one legislation. And what is that kind of interpretation? It accepts that NERSA determines tariffs, while municipalities, on the other hand, set tariffs or levy tariffs or impose tariffs. Now, how do you reconcile the two? In this interpretation, municipalities set or levy tariffs which have been determined by NERSA. If you take it in that particular way, what then do we do? In this context, SAGA sought to influence NERSA's processes in such a way that NERSA determines tariffs that do not undermine the financial viability of municipalities. One. Secondly, sought to influence NERSA's processes in such a way that the timing is such that the determination is done on time to allow municipalities to comply with local government legislation in respect of tariff setting. That's what we thought we were trying to do. Unfortunately, thus far, this has not yet yielded the positive results that we're looking for. After NERSA did not complete the process it started last year, where it issued consultation papers on tariff determination process and inclining block tariff. We previously raised these concerns, and we felt that what they were doing in terms of starting this consultation process was in response to this particular concerns that we have raised. So far, NERSA has not yet publicly issued a guideline regarding municipal tariff increases or a final determination in respect of the process. From the feedback we are getting from municipalities, that this has negatively affected the budgeting processes of municipalities, and we are committed to continue to engage NERSA in respect of this. The second area that we are asked to address is SALGA's views on the distribution industry. Most of it has been covered by the Department of Energy, which is the characteristics of the distribution industry that we need to address. The area of high inefficiency of the industry, which could be explained by the fragmentation, and then the department has talked to that, inability to leverage of economies of scale, inequitable treatment of consumers across the country, where some consumers could have fairly safer access to electricity, whereas others cannot, outages and so on and so on. All of these issues are issues that local governments and municipalities at the SALGA conference recognized, without going into all of the detail about them. But what has been done in terms of this? The first remedial attempt to deal with all of these things that we have outlined in the last three slides was this initiative of establishing the REZ, which everyone has talked to. I'm not going to go into detail, but I think one lesson that could be drawn out of it is that under the current fiscal environment for local government, in which municipalities have to draw money from electricity to be able to fund the performance of all other functions, which is basically they're drawing money from electricity and raise income to perform all other 38 functions of municipalities. It is not possible to have a strong, what you can call, electricity distributors and strong municipalities. They can't coexist under the current circumstances, under the current environment. And therefore, if you want to go this route, we need to first resolve where money from municipalities will come from, if you want to go the route of getting money to go to the rest. So that's the main point that we think is important, and we're happy that Cabinet decided to discontinue this process without resolving the issue that we're raising about the financial viability of municipalities. So I think part of the intervention was the implementation of ADAMO, the department has talked to, and we note that so far there's no funding that is close to what is required to deal with the problem. The other issue relates to relief to the poor and low usage consumers. Here again, the regulator in this case started this process by regulating that all distributors must implement inclining block tariffs, designed in its own way inclining block tariffs. But unfortunately, there were many shortcomings, and we have raised this with the regulator at SALGA. That those shortcomings will typically result, if you apply them rigidly, in a situation where there will be huge losses on the side of municipalities. We have proposed alternatives to the regulator in terms of dealing with this, and we're hoping that in that consultation process in respect of the IBTs, these issues that we have raised will be taken into account, and we will be continuing to engage them, the regulator in this regard. Another issue that we need to deal with, that we outlined earlier, is the issue of huge losses of revenue as a result of electricity theft, which unfortunately, despite its impact, it's still perceived as a minor offense. We have, as SALGA, partnered or are in partnership in an initiative that is led by ESCOM of implementing Operation Kanyisa and anti-electricity theft campaign. We think we need to do more in terms of the implementation of this campaign, particularly at the level of the municipalities. We will be talking to ESCOM in terms of building our own capacity as SALGA to be able to do this, because it's not an area in which we have resources to really invest into it. In respect of the electrification program, we indicated in the earlier slide that I passed on that there is electrification currently stands roughly at about 83%, and where you have most of the backlog now in terms of electrification is rural areas. And it is in these rural areas where actually ESCOM is a distributor. Municipalities are not distributors in these areas. These are difficult areas to supply to. There's a need to find a solution to. What has been happening is that non-distributing municipalities, out of desperation, and you would know that because these are non-distributing municipalities, they do not have electricity departments. They try and get into this space being completely dependent on consultants to design and implement projects, which eventually they will hand over to ESCOM to operate and maintain. In some cases, distributing municipalities, they in the rural areas of their areas of jurisdiction also do the same as part of this. We think it's not a sustainable way of dealing with this. What then is SALGA saying in respect of this? There are quite a number of things that at the conference of municipalities organized by SALGA, there were quite a number of decisions that were taken. One, engaging the Department of Energy to develop an alternative approach to resolving the structural issues facing the electricity distribution industry. I think a part of this particular resolution is recognizing that the structural issues that were identified remain. They need to be resolved. So we do need to think differently. The grand approach of establishing REDs across the country in a context, as we outlined earlier on, we think has not worked. But we cannot say that on the basis of that, we will stop thinking about developing an approach that responds to this. And we think that there could be different solutions to different parts of the country as opposed to a grand approach across the country. To continue to engage NERSA regarding the principles and the design and the implementation of the inclining block tariff, because there is a need to have a viable proper tariff structure, but then the current ones as we have it tend to work against the objectives of the financial viability of the distributor. Some of the resolutions to improve the capacity of the INEP regional offices to provide technical support to undercapacitated municipalities, because already there's some kind of what we could call a seed of capacity sitting in the INEP offices, that if we could put more capacity there, that could help those low capacity municipalities in respect of this. There are other much more specific recommendations. On the side of municipalities is to act and report on actions in relation to electricity theft. We think it's an area that we could, as municipalities, do more in respect of, hence municipalities resolve to do that. Review bylaws and have more stringent penalties against electricity theft given its impact on the industry. I think I'm not going to go into detail about each and every recommendation that came out of it. Some of them are specific sectors such as human settlements sector and use of the INEP offices more effectively. Then I will just quickly in the next two slides talk about the rehabilitation of infrastructure. I think the main point that municipalities want to make, because in the discussion about rehabilitation, people tend to start from the here and now, to say we have a problem, let's deal with the rehabilitation. But if you look at it in its historical context, you would understand that municipalities inherited old infrastructure right from the beginning. In some cases, it already was due for replacement or overdue for replacement. So in a sense, municipalities did take a liability rather than an asset in some of the cases, because they also inherited the responsibility of replacing and refurbishing old infrastructure. But then, that infrastructure, in its historical context, it was servicing a minority of the population, largely defined along racial lines. It could not have been a socially sustainable thing to have, to say, we've inherited this and therefore let's maintain it. So rightfully, the new democratic government decided to rather prioritize extension of services to the unserved. So that old infrastructure that is inherited, largely in the urban areas, continued to be neglected. Without a policy solution to say how do we respond to that liability that was inherited by local government. The view of local government that in the first place the rehabilitation of this old infrastructure should not and cannot be left to municipalities alone. It's part of a historic problem of the country that all of us must as different role players in the industry, especially the different spheres of government, must deal with it. A related challenge is a challenge regarding the state of infrastructure, data about the state of infrastructure, which in some cases municipalities did not have. What then did the Conference of SALGAS say, and what we are taking forward is that there is a need for a national municipal infrastructure refurbishment fund. Because if you are talking about 30 billion, 34 billion, municipalities alone are never going to be able to raise 30, 34 billion. There is a need for an effort. And we think the starting point would be to have this fund that will be a municipal infrastructure refurbishment fund. We're talking across sectors of infrastructure now, not only in terms of electricity, but 30 billion is in electricity only. We think this fund should be used to leverage private sector investment. Municipalities using this fund can, in their books, start leveraging private sector investment. The second one, which we talked about, is the issue of the, of knowledge about where things are, the state of the infrastructure in the country, is establishment of a national GIS-based databases to collect and also programs to collect data and manage information on an ongoing basis on the state of infrastructure. We could also think if we have a handle on this, we could use this to coordinate acquisition of infrastructure components. Part of the problem, I think colleagues who work in the different sectors, in the energy sector, the municipalities will be able to tell you that the current ways of acquiring components, parts, tend to be constrained by the approaches that have been regulated on municipalities to source supplies, which is the supply chain management processes of municipalities, which impacts negatively on maintenance of this thing. So we think we need an approach that talks to that as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Salga. We now call upon NERSA. We'll break after NERSA, Honorable Freyland. I see that you are tired, but we'll break after NERSA.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members of the various portfolio and select committees. Thank you for the opportunity to address you. This presentation today I will share with my colleague, the full-time regulator member responsible for electricity, Mr. Kembani Pukul. I'll do the introductory component and he'll take the presentation from the point where we deal with electricity-specific issues. That's the contents of what we will address, and some of the issues have already been canvassed by other presenters, and to that extent we will just try and go over them speedily. We thought that it's important that we contextualize NERSA, and so that the House can understand the basis on which we do the work that we do. We're a regulatory authority established as a juristic person in terms of Section 3 of the National Energy Regulator Act. Essentially, in our character, we're an economic regulator that's meant to intervene where the market forces do not quite operate as they should. Electricity supply
gas supply as well as petroleum pipelines tends to be monopoly supplied, whether it's private sector or public sector owned, but it tends to be monopoly supplied, and therefore to ensure that there's fairness, particularly in pricing, you then create economic regulators, and that's amongst the other reasons why NERSA exists. Our mandate is derived from three underlying statutes. In relation to electricity, we are guided by the Electricity Regulation Act of 2006, Act number 40 of 2006. We also regulate piped gas under the Gas Act, Act 48 of 2001, as well as petroleum pipelines, guided by the Petroleum Pipelines Act, Act number 60 of 2003. As indicated, we established as an independent regulator. We established on 1 October 2005, independent, so that our views are not biased. Our decisions are based on reasons, facts, as well as evidence, and we hold public meetings to ensure that there's transparency and that we are able to obtain views from both experts as well as end users of regulated services. The regulator is made up of 9 members, 1 part-time member who is designated as a chairperson by the minister, 1 full-time member, the CEO, 3 full-time regulator members, primarily responsible for each of the regulated industries, as well as 4 other part-time regulator members. We believe that these regulatory principles are very important, and we have enshrined them as the basis on which we do our work as a regulator. So the principles are as follows. In relation to the rule of law, we apply the law equally to everybody, and there is a clear framework for all players that play in this particular space, and if there's got to be a review, that would then go to the High Court. In terms of transparency, we provide reasons for all decisions we take, and we utilize extensively the consultation processes that we adopted as our modus operandi. We also subscribe to the principle of neutrality, where we ensure that we're neutral to all market players without favoring one or the other, and in instances where the market the playing fields are not level, part of our mandate is to ensure that we create a level playing field for all players. We also subscribe to the principle of consistency, where we say that our decisions will be explained and stakeholders will be able to take informed decisions, and there will be no surprises in the way we execute our responsibility. Independence, very important. We're independent from all stakeholders, both policymakers, lawmakers, operators, as well as customers. However, our role is to try and balance the interests of those particular stakeholders. And, of course, significantly, accountability. We emphasize internal accountability, and the regulator takes responsibility for all its actions as well as its decisions. We, in addition to that, bind ourselves to carry our responsibilities and our business efficiently, economically, as well as effectively, as required by legislation. Chairperson, at this point, I'd like to hand over to my colleague to specifically canvass our electricity mandate in relation to the distribution industry.
Thank you, CEO, Chairperson, and honorable members. My part is really going to focus on the powers and duties of the electricity or energy regulator with respect to the electricity, both the supply and the distribution industry. Our functions really can be grouped into 4 areas. The first one is the one of controlling entry via licensing. The second one is the one of regulating prices and tariffs. The third one is the one of setting, monitoring, and enforcing compliance. And the last one really is the one of looking at disputes, complaints, and undertaking investigations. And these duties and powers that we have are applicable to all 175 or 188 municipal distributors. We have a part of the Act where I think we have on many occasions been said to be a regulator with no teeth, a part of the Act that allows us to impose a fine or a penalty of up to 2 million rand for any contraventions of this. But I think part of this has also not been applied, because in some of the municipalities we impose that fine, it may even be a challenge to get it collected. But there's a part of our act that allows us to do this, but I think there's also a part of the act that does not allow us to do this, because if a municipality does not pay this act, it is also not a criminal offense, so they can take the fine and still not pay it, and there's nothing much that we can do. But having said that, I think that we have found other methods of dealing with the contraventions of some of the license conditions. Now, as I indicated, you know, the act is applicable fully to the municipalities, so this slide really has been covered by the ones that I've spoken to. If I may just talk around the constraints and the challenges that we have experienced in this field. The first one is we have 188 distribution licenses. I know the slide from DOE said 187. Ganja was 188. The license was issued in June 2010. What we have in these, we have more than 2,000 tariff structures from the different municipalities. And the biggest reason for this is that the different municipalities have different customer mixes and customer structures. If you look at Ekurhuleni, they have mostly industrial customers that pay or consume more than 80% of their electricity, and then your domestic customers that consume your other 20%. If you take Umthezi, you have the other way around. 80% of the customers are domestic, and 20% is your small commercial and industrial. Now, the other challenge that we have is that in most municipalities, the electricity business is not necessarily ring-fenced as a business where you can easily see what the business costs and what is a subsidy to the other services that the municipality offers. And I think one that has been hopped on is the fact that the infrastructure is quite old, and it was also not designed to carry the load that it is currently carrying right now. And in the technical audits that we have conducted of up to 50 municipalities, what has been revealed is that there are no formalized maintenance practice. And I think the one about the backlog in 2007, sitting at 27 billion rand, has been stressed. And the part about the dual reporting, I know that we have only mentioned National Treasury, and COCTA is also another regulator that imposes certain requirements on municipalities. And most of these issues arise from the deadlines that we have, the deadlines that National Treasury has for municipalities to have their budgets, and the deadlines that Treasury has or COCTA has when it comes to having their approved budgets. But all of these are not matters that cannot be solved. It's a question of aligning. But having said that, some of the directives that have to be issued don't necessarily align with some of the work that is required to be done. And I think the presenter from SALG has already indicated that to date no guideline has been increased, and there's a reason for that. Guidelines get issued when they are going to provide guidance, for now, now that the information that is required is not adequate, a guideline has not been issued. The other issue around NASA and municipalities is that the information that we require to enable us to apply the law that says that you must ensure that an efficient licensee recovers the full cost of its license activities, including a reasonable return when you are setting your tariffs. Now, the information that we require mostly from municipalities to enable us to do that is not information that we always get, and when we get, it's not always the most accurate information. But with time, I think from when we started in 2003 with the first distribution summit in 2008, I think we have seen major improvement. Up to 80% of the information that we receive these days has a level of accuracy that can enable you to determine certain tariffs. And the other part that is sometimes an issue is the misalignment of our financial year, and the one for ESCOM being end of March, and the one for municipalities being end of June. And in the setting of those tariffs, there is always the 3 months in between that we have to deal with and try and normalize, so that you do not have one having a disadvantage of having to pay more than they should pay, especially when there's a change of tariffs. When there's no change or major change of tariffs, this 3 months of delay is not an issue. The other part that we also have issues with or challenges in as far as the setting of tariffs is what has also been mentioned, that we can set and determine the tariffs, but municipalities can also have their own surcharges that may be added onto the tariff, and it is not part of what we regulate. The interventions that we have taken is we have in most occasions looked at the tariff structures where we have the reasonable or accurate information, and we have tried to harmonize some of the tariffs. But the biggest challenge is that you cannot find a municipality that's exactly the same as the other one. So no matter how much you try to harmonize, they have their own unique structures, and they have their own unique tariffs that they would like to impose. So that is one of the challenges that we have, that harmonizing the tariff structures when the municipalities are so unique and are so different in as far as the customer mix is one of the things that's not very easy to do. However, in the summits that we had in 2008, there were certain resolutions that were made that have been implemented that have resulted in some form of harmonization of tariffs and in some form of sharing of information around the maintenance practices that would improve how municipalities are operated. Now, in the tariff, when we allow for municipal tariffs and when we do the guideline, we always set a minimum of around 6% of maintenance by municipalities. So we say in the revenue that they are going to be allowed, 6% of that revenue or 6% of the cost should be spent on maintenance. And in many instances where municipalities approach the regulator and say that we would like to not only maintain but replace or refurbish our plant, then they give us a business plan. They are given a guideline or an increase that's above the guideline. And in many instances, I saw that FSC showed City Power. City Power was given an increase that allowed them to refurbish their plant. As a result, when you've just renewed your plant, you then naturally have to spend less on maintenance. And it is not that they are not doing that. And there are many other municipalities that do that. So, and in the technical audit that I indicated earlier, where we had more than 50 municipalities being looked at, yes, it is true that you do find your low levels of maintenance and inadequate manpower, but there has been an improvement. I've spoken about this slide, but what I would like to talk around about here is the levies and the surcharges and the markups that municipalities have. When we've done a benchmark, what we have found is that we have a range of between 20 and up to 100% markups for municipalities, where you find that a municipality being supplied or a customer that is on the one street is supplied by Eskom at one rate just across the street, supplied by a municipality, you have those markups. And lately our customer complaints that have increased emanate from those customers that say that I would like to just buy the property across the street and get power from Eskom and supply my plant, which is on the other side of the street, because the markups are up to 100%. And yes, there are issues, as Mr. Colisa has indicated, that Eskom does not provide the other services that municipalities provide. But this is one of those issues that is starting to arise now, where we are getting more of your energy-intensive users in the different municipalities wanting to move over to be supplied by Eskom. Now, in the free basic electricity and inclining block tariffs implementation, yes, NERSA does not implement inclining block tariffs rigidly. We have come to understand that, as Mr. Musi has said, there's no one shoe that fits all the municipalities. So each municipality has got its own unique circumstances. So when they come and present what is the case that would ensure that they are revenue neutral, whilst they're ensuring that they're implementing tariffs that assist those who are in the low income grouping, then the tariffs are set in a way that takes into consideration the circumstances of those municipalities. To date, we have over 69 municipalities that are implementing inclining block tariffs with high degrees of success because they've customized them to meet their requirements. And yes, we are consulting on a different way of implementing them, but I think what we are doing currently, that is the way of customizing the inclining block tariffs, is the basic step that has to be taken in the process of having your inclining block tariffs achieving what was achieved, to say that the less you consume, the less you pay, the more you consume, the more you pay, and in a way support the municipalities to insulate those who are low consumers from rising electricity tariffs. Now, in the implementation of a free basic electricity, this also has its varying levels of success, where you find that some municipalities are implementing the 50 kilowatt hours per month as indicated or as is dictated, but others are implementing 80 and 100, and they implement it to all of their customers and find the right cost subsidies. But you then find in other municipalities that there is no implementation of the free basic electricity. And the other one where we have either technical losses, which would result in the revenue collection that is not optimal, which is either from electricity being stolen or meters being inaccurate, or the whole distribution system being not the most optimal or efficient one, resulting in losses that are much higher than this. And what we also say in the allowance that we give in the tariff as bad debt, that there's an increase since there was an increase in the price of electricity. Those are the issues that, to a large extent, characterize the municipalities that we regulate. And in conclusion, we'd like to say that in spite of the challenges that we have of having to regulate 187 municipalities that do not have the same sort of resources in as far as providing us with information and providing us with the strategies and rules, we are of the view that it is a process that will be achieved, and it is an elephant that has to be bitten in small bits to make sure that we get to what an efficient electricity distribution industry should be. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Nasser. Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to break for 10 minutes, and we'll be back at, it is now nearly 25 past, so let's be back at 12, so that we can proceed. There's refreshments at the back. Please help yourself for 10 minutes. Thank you.